Jananjana salakaya chaksur miritam yena tasmai si gurave namaha Sri Chaitanya manuvistam stapitam jena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadati svapandantikam Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 8, Chapter 16, The Payavrata Process of Worship, Text 23. Adisha,
Adisha
Tvam
Dvijashrestha
Vidim
Tat
Upadhavanam
Ashu
Tushyati
Me
Devaha
Siddhyan
Siddhyan Siddhantyaha
Saha
Putrakai
Adisha
Tvam
Dvijashrestha
Vidim Tat Upadavanam
Ashutushyati
Me
Deva
Siddhantya saha putrakai.
Adisha,
just instruct me. Tvam,
O
my husband.
Dvija
Shrestha,
O
best of the Brahmanas.
Vidim,
the regulative principles.
Tat,
the Lord.
Upadavanam,
the process of worshipping.
Ashu,
very soon.
Tushyati,
becomes satisfied.
May,
unto me.
Deva,
the Lord.
Siddhantyaha,
now lamenting.
Saha,
with.
Putrakai,
all my sons, the demigods. Just before I forget, if by some chance the weather changes, then we will go on the Harinam, I believe, tonight. Isn't it? Today's Friday night. But if the weather doesn't change, then we will have class. So either we will have Bhagavad Gita class by 7, or we will go on Harinam by 7. Depending on the weather. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. O best of the Brahmanas, kindly instruct me in the perfect method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service, by which the Lord may very soon be pleased with me and save me, along with my sons, from this most dangerous condition. Purport. Sometimes less intelligent men ask whether one has to approach a guru to be instructed in devotional service for spiritual advancement. The answer is given here, indeed, not only here, but also in Bhagavad Gita, where Arjuna accepted Krishna as his guru. Shishyasteham sadhi mam tvam prapanam. The Vedas also instruct, tat vijinartam saguram eva bhagachet. One must accept a guru for proper direction if one is seriously inclined toward advancement in spiritual life. The Lord says that one must worship the acharya, who is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Acharyam mam vijanihat. One should definitely understand this. In Chaitanya Chaitamrita, it is said that the Guru is the manifestation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, according to all the evidence given by the Shastra and by the practical behavior of the devotees, one must accept a guru. Aditi accepted her husband as her guru so that he would direct her how to advance in spiritual consciousness, devotional service, by worshiping the Supreme Lord. Vanjakalpaturubhajcha kripa shindu bihibhacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So our position is to be dependent, not independent. The reason we have come into this material world is because we have unsuccessfully tried to be independent of God. As soon as one thinks himself to be equal or superior to God, he falls down into this material world. In fact, we can state that one is still in a fallen condition as long as he puts himself forward as a false or imitation God. Now, one may say, well, you'd have to be pretty stupid to think that you could be God. But although people may not declare themselves that, you know, they may not present a business card which says, John Smith, God, still, by their behavior, they are behaving in such a way. There's a nice verse in the Gita which states, Nirmana moha nija sanga dosha adhyatma nitya vinivritta kamaha dvanvera vimukta sukha dukha samjnaya gachanti amuda padam avyam tat. Krishna explains in this verse of the Gita the qualification for returning to the kingdom of God. And it has to do with acquiring adhyatma nitya, acquiring eternal knowledge. Eternal knowledge is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, transcendental knowledge, very elaborately, because we pray, Om Abhyana Timanandasa Jananjana Salakaya Chaksul Umilatam Jena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Tamaha. We pray to the spiritual master to bring us out of darkness. What does darkness mean? It means ignorance. And the ignorance which is discussed means, as it mentions here, mana moha, false prestige, illusion, sangha dosha, association with so many faults, kama, dvandvahai, vimuktai, sukha dukkha. We have to overcome all of these. Illusion that this material body is my true self. This is a great illusion. And sukha dukkha, what does it mean? Happiness and distress based upon the body. At the present moment, we think that we are doers. We think that anyone who thinks, in fact, that he is a doer is under illusion. Why? Because the Bhagavad Gita explains who is doing everything. It is not the soul. When we see, when we hear, when we taste, when we smell, when we touch, it is only the senses in contact with the sense objects that are active. And so the results which come about due to the senses interacting with the sense objects, these results are called karma. And at the present moment, we are suffering the result of the past interactions of the senses and their objects. And again, the same thing is being set up. So who is one in transcendental knowledge? Who knows that during all of this, things that are going on, the soul is not acting. So we have to, therefore, now Prabhupada gives what we must do. In the Bhagavad Gita, when he explains this point in a purport, it's a very nice purport in the fifth chapter of the Gita. A person in divine consciousness, although engaging in seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, eating, moving, about sleeping and breathing always knows within himself that he actually does nothing at all. Because while speaking, evacuating, receiving, or opening or closing his eyes, he always knows that only the material senses are engaged with their objects and that he is aloof from them. Now the purport is a very interesting purport to these two verses. This is Bhagavad Gita 5, 8, and 9. Prabhupada's whole purport describes how a devotee does use his senses in Krishna's service, and that the use of the senses by a devotee is very different than the use of the senses by a materialist. Normally, the soul or the consciousness is not involved. The spiritual consciousness is not involved with all of these bodily functions. But in the case of a devotee, these actions are all done for the pleasure of Krishna. In other words, a devotee only is interested in seeing the transcendental form of the deity. The devotee is only interested in tasting with his tongue, using his sense of taste to taste Krishna prasad. So are these senses and the engagement of the senses material or are they spiritual? Obviously, they're spiritual. The objects are spiritual. And how can the objects be touched by material senses? The senses are gradually becoming spiritualized or purified in contact with spiritual sense objects. And what is directing all of this? Consciousness. What type of consciousness? Spiritual consciousness. And where? What is the basis of spiritual consciousness? The soul. So the point is here, Sarvu Pari Virnir Muktam Tat Pratrena Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikenam Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. This verse states that one must give up sarva upadi, all false identities. And what are those false identities? Identities attached to this body. I'm a mother, I'm a father, I'm a man, a woman, I'm young, I'm old, American, Russian, whatever. All of these are false identities. First of all, we must give these up. Then, Rishikesha Rishikenam Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. What is the definition of bhakti? When we use our senses in the service of Krishna. Such a person is a devotee. And who is that devotee? Is it just the body? Is it only external? No, it is the soul. So this is real life. And everything other than this is a ghostly existence. Most people appear to be very active. We see people are... You go on the freeway right now at this time in the morning. The freeway is packed with cars. People zipping about the city going to work. We may go out later on in Sankirtan, either in Harinama book distribution. We're going to meet so many people. Very, very active. But according to Bhagavad Gita, they're not active. They, the soul, are not acting. What is acting? The senses and the sense objects. Nothing more. The soul is remaining in an inactive, dormant condition. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee is that a devotee is truly alive. His soul is active, as opposed to simply the external senses. So to gain this knowledge, this is transcendental knowledge. And what is the result? One becomes truly happy. Sukha dukkha, or happiness and distress, which is a type of duality, is only referring to the body. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochati nakangshati. When one comes on the Brahma-bhuta platform, which means a spiritual platform, there's no more hankering and no more lamentation. We see that normally people are on a roller coaster of emotions, up and down. Sometimes they're depressed, sometimes they become elated. What is this an indication of? That they're not in transcendental knowledge. They're identified with their body or with the subtle form of the body, which is what? The mind, the intelligence, and the ego. So we have to learn to control all of these, the mind, the intelligence, the ego, and purify them. Purify the gross body also by touching it to Krishna. This is actually yoga. Yoga means to withdraw the senses, the mind, from all types of material objects, and to focus all of these on Krishna. That's yoga. Yoga means connection. Connecting the soul, First of all, in transcendental consciousness, and connecting everything with Krishna. Then there is no such thing as material action, material reaction. A devotee is free from this. Krishna told Arjuna, you don't have to worry, because you're engaged in my devotional service. You will not have to suffer reactions. Arjuna was very much confused. In the Bhagavad Gita, you see a whole discussion going on. It's very interesting. In the third chapter, which is Karma Yoga, the question which Arjuna asks is, O Keshava, Krishna, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Two chapters later, in the fifth chapter, what is the question that Arjuna asked Krishna to start off the chapter? O Krishna, first of all, you asked me to renounce work, and then again you recommend work with devotion. Now, will you kindly tell me definitely which of the two is more beneficial? Same question, isn't it? It's the same question. Arjuna is asking Krishna, what do you want of me? First of all, you say, don't work, and then you say, work. First of all, you recommend transcendental knowledge, which Arjuna feels means don't work. And then on the other hand, you say, fight. Like Krishna says, at the end of the fourth chapter, what does Krishna tell Arjuna? He says, therefore, the doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. Definitely calling him to act. So, there's a reason why this discussion seems to repeat itself. Because it is very difficult to understand the difference between acting without getting any reactions and acting in a way which brings reactions. In the incomplete understanding, one tends to want to withdraw from activity. One tends to be very cautious. But this is not real knowledge. When Arjuna pulls away and tells Krishna, I better renounce, I better take sannyas. Again, what does Krishna tell him? He deals with him on this point. Again and again he says, here. The renunciation of work and work in devotion are both good for liberation. But of the two, work in devotional service is better than renunciation of work. Better than it. Why? Because if you renounce activities, but the desire is still within the mind or the heart, you'll be brought to that same action anyway. You won't really be detached. So there is a tendency amongst neophyte devotees not to take up fully devotional service. They fear that I'll get entangled, I'll become encumbered. So they hold back. But what is the result? They still find themselves caught up in so much material activity. Instead of being engaged in devotional service, by the nature the soul is active, and because they haven't really come to a taste, a real taste of spiritual life, they land up on the material platform. Therefore, what was the recommendation which Srila Prabhupada gave to the devotees? Constant engagement in Krishna's service. Prabhupada said, we should pray to become entangled in spiritual life. I had personal experience of this. When we went to India with Prabhupada in 1970, we were in Calcutta. At that time, I was traveling with Prabhupada and all the other parties. Please, you can take darshan. All the other persons in the party, they were sannyasis. At that time, I was not a sannyasi. So everyone who was a sannyasi was thinking, I am a sannyasi. I should not be engaged in any, karmic activity. So what were they all doing? They were all playing the harmonium. They were all chanting extra rounds. They were all memorizing verses. And they were doing all kinds of things like this, right? And what did I have to do? Everything else. So the situation became very difficult for me, you see, because they were all sannyasis except for me. So finally I went to Prabhupada and I said, Srila Prabhupada, this is a very, very difficult situation. Nobody's doing anything. I have to do all the fundraising. I have to keep all the accounts. In fact, I have to clean the place. I have to do everything. And everybody else says I'm sannyas. So Prabhupada simply started laughing. I was crying. I had tears in my eyes, and Prabhupada started laughing. He laughed at me, and he said, actually, this is the same circumstance that Arjuna found himself in. The same circumstance. And he said, actually, you're the most fortunate. You're more fortunate because you are so fully absorbed in Krishna's service. He said, Maya has no opportunity to enter. He said, we should pray to have so much service to do that Maya does not find a single way of entering. So, this is the point that Krishna is trying to make to Arjuna. Don't be afraid of fighting. Don't think that this fighting is going to incur fruitive karma for you. No. This fighting is done under my order. It is your dharma. It is transcendental. You are a kshatriya. And this is a righteous war. So by doing your duty, that's the sign that you have transcendental knowledge. Devotees should realize this. Sometimes they hold back from accepting too much service. They think, oh, it will entangle me. But the real proof of your advancement is that you can do your duty in a detached way. Where you do your duty, but you remain very detached. And you let Krishna be the receiver, the recipient of the service. You let Krishna arrange the result of the service. You do your duty very nicely. Now, as that transcendental knowledge takes effect and you get away from the mode of ignorance and passion, what is the mode of ignorance and passion conditioning you to? Two things. Either laziness. The mode of ignorance will condition you to laziness, or the mode of passion conditions you to attached desires, to trying to fulfill so many desires. How do you get free from passion and ignorance? By doing your duty. By doing your prescribed duties. Because that proves that you have transcendental knowledge, and which is in the mode of goodness. A person who acts on the platform of duty has transcendental knowledge. So he's not affected by passion and ignorance. And what is the result of transcendental knowledge? You will gradually be able to appreciate Krishna. And what will happen when you appreciate Krishna? Then the motivation for the service will be out of love. Love is something that comes later on. It cannot come in the beginning. At the present moment, we don't understand what is actually love of God. We may think, oh, I have always understood about God. I have always been a believer in God. You see? But the fact is that we have always been a believer in our bodies, not in God. We have not been on the transcendental platform. But first of all, come on the point of doing your duty. And when you do your duty very nicely, when you get that strength, which comes from doing one's duty nicely, then Krishna will gradually turn that duty into love. In the beginning, we serve out of duty, but gradually we serve spontaneously out of love and devotion. So all of these things are to be learned by a disciple. And to help a disciple to understand this, guru is necessary. And the whole purport in this verse today is the necessity of accepting a guru. Guru, we have to accept in so many cases. Not only as the person who initiates us, the person who instructs us in spiritual knowledge, but guru nashashat, svajano nashashat, pita nashasyat, janami nashasyat. Daivim natachyan, napitas chashashyan, namuchayad ya samupeti mityum. The Bhagavatam informs us that no one can become a person accepting dependence. That means you cannot be in a superior position to others, which is the position of a guru, whether it happens to be as a father who's instructing sons or daughters, a mother who's instructing children, a teacher instructing students, a temple leader instructing devotees in a temple. Practically every one of us sitting here finds ourselves in the position of guru. Even a new bhakta is a guru. Why? Because you go out and you preach. You're taking the position of a guru. So then what is the qualification of a guru? Here it mentions Namochayad ya samupeti mrityum. You should not become a guru if you cannot deliver those who are depending upon you from the cycle of birth and death. How will you deliver them? What is the means of delivering someone? By two means. One, by your teaching to them, by your instruction to them. And what is the second? By your example. So we're all put into this position of being guru. And we have to now become qualified. Acharyamam vijanayam avamanyete karichit. Now, it is mentioned in the 11th canon of the Bhagavatam, what is an acharya? Namartav yudya suyeta sarva deva mayo guru. A guru is the sum and total of all the demigods. He knows the purpose behind the scriptures. He samitpani shrotriyam brahmanishtam. He is fixed in the transcendental position. Brahmanishtam. Brahma means the spiritual platform. Nishta, firm faith. He's very strongly fixed in that position. Samitpani shrotriyam. He has heard the scriptures. Now you have to consider, do you know the scriptures? You may be thinking, oh, what do I need to know the scriptures? I'm just a mother. All I have to do is clean my house. Or, I'm just a father. All I have to do is go to work and bring home a paycheck. Is it true? No. Because you're in the position of guru. So what do you have to do? Samitpani shrotriyam bhamanistam. You have to know the scriptures. How will you know the scriptures? Well, to begin with, you have to read them a little. You have to show some sincerity. You may say, I'm stupid. I fall within the category of street. Striya vaishyas tata sudras. I'm like a sudra. Everybody knows that a woman is stupid. She only has half the brain size of a man. We've heard Prabhupada said that. So I don't have to read, because I don't. Even if I did read, I won't understand what I'm reading. You could say like that. But we see Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to South India, he met a Brahmin there. This Brahmin was crying. And everyone was laughing at him. And so Lord Chaitanya said to him, what is going on here? And he looked. And the Brahmin, what was he doing? He was reading Bhagavad Gita. And how was he reading it? The book, he could not understand what he was reading. He couldn't read properly. And the reason why people were laughing at him was that he was not very educated. So Lord Chaitanya said, why are you crying? You might have thought, well, he was crying because people were making fun of him. No. He was crying for another reason. He said, I'm remembering the battle of Kurukshetra. I am remembering Arjuna. I am remembering that Krishna, who is the Supreme Lord, the cause of all causes, he personally took up the reins and became the servant of his devotee. I am remembering how this Krishna, who is the greatest of all personalities, prefers to be in the position of a servant than the master. I'm thinking how God himself wishes to serve his devotees. How kind he is to his devotees. And this is making me feel this way. When Lord Chaitanya heard this, what did he do? He took this Brahmin within his arms and he said, you are the real, student of Bhagavad Gita. You have understood Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita and Vedic literatures will not simply be understood by rote memorization. It is understood by the grace of Guru. How do you get the grace of Guru? What is the way to get the mercy of the spiritual master? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Narottam Das Thakur have sung many verses. Krishna se tomar, Krishna dite paro. Taumara sakati ache, amito kangal, Krishna Krishna boli, dhaya tava pache pache. This very nice song, Oi Vaishnava Thakur. He is praying, O Vaishnav Thakur, O devotee of the Lord. You have Krishna, and you can give him to me. So I am running after you, praying, please give me Krishna, please give me Krishna. What is the way that we can get to understand Krishna consciousness. What is this? What is the whole purpose behind Bhagavad Gita? There's only one subject. What is that? Krishna. In all the Vedic literatures, there's only one subject. What is that? Krishna. And how do we get Krishna? Bhagavata Gita Pore, Bhagavata Stani. Lord Chaitanya said, what? You can understand Srimad Bhagavatam only by one means, by going to a person Bhagavata. By going to a devotee whose life is dedicated to Srimad Bhagavatam. That means who is absorbed in remembering the pastimes of Krishna, which is the purpose of the Bhagavatam, who is absorbed in teaching the Bhagavatam by his actions, and those actions may not simply be sitting on a Vyasasan speaking, it may be the living Bhagavata. Just like we always praise our godbrother Jayananda Prabhu. Why? He was not a great erudite scholar. Neither was Arjuna. Then why is it that we praise Jayananda Prabhu? What was he? A taxi driver. He used to take out the garbage. Yet, we celebrate his disappearance day. Why? Because he was a living example of a very, very sincere, humble Vaishnava. And from such a person's behavior, we can learn the essence of spiritual life. So we have to go. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastri Koi, Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hai. We have to go for Sadhu Sangha. How much? Even a moment, Lava Matra, even a little bit of association. Depending upon the level of advancement of the devotee, even a slight bit of association can completely transform a person. It doesn't require much. Why? Because a devotee is an ocean of mercy. A devotee will pray to Krishna, please deliver this person. This is how you read Chaitanya Chaitamrita. How the associates of Mahaprabhu could deliver so many persons only by the compassionate nature of their hearts. Even the dead, just like in the case of Saranga Thakur, Murari. Just by his desire, he brought a dead man back to life and made him a pure devotee. A dead body floating on a river. Everybody was telling Saranga Thakur, you should have a disciple. So he said, all right, tomorrow, the first person I meet, I will accept him. So when he went in the morning, what do people do when they get up in the morning? Dr. Reggie, what's the first thing you do when you get up in the morning? Take a bath. Right. Well, in Mayapur, during Lord Chaitanya's time, they didn't have showers. They didn't need them. Where did they go? To the Ganga. So he went to the Ganga. And who was the first person he met there? A dead body floating on the Ganga. So he thought, anyway, I said that I would try to accept the first body I met. So he touched this person, and what happened? The soul came back in the body. This person was just about to get married, and he had been bitten, I think, by a snake, and he died. So they sent the body in the Ganga. So now he came back to life. When he came back to life, all of his family members heard about it. They rushed. They said, ah, our son has come back to life. He said, son? He said, I don't know. I don't know if I'm your son. Here's the person who gave me life. This is my guru. He has given me life. He said, I'm no longer your son. I'm his son because I got my life back by his grace. So he became a great devotee of the Lord. What was his name? Murari Chaitanya. Such a great devotee. This Murari Chaitanya was so fearless because he had already come back from death. He used to slap the cheeks of tigers. He would play with tigers and slap their cheeks. He was completely fearless. So actually, it's very instructive. You may say, well, why are we hearing about dead bodies? Because we are dead bodies. Until we meet the spiritual master, we are just nothing but a body. Our souls are sleeping. And so when the spiritual master touches us, and gives to us the mercy of Krishna coming through Guru Parampara, it means that we have been given life by our Guru. That is called the second birth. Everybody can get a first birth from a material father and mother. Everybody gets a first birth. What is the value of such a first birth? Snakes get first births. Mongooses get first births. Giraffes get first birth. Every kind of creature gets a first birth from a father and mother. But who can get a second birth? Bhaktin Stacy. Who gets second birth? Only whom? Human beings. Only a human being can get a second birth. Everybody should pay careful attention and don't pass things around in the middle of lectures, which distract people. So, we should understand, therefore, that this example of Saranga Thakur and Murari Chaitanya is not unique. It is unique in the sense that he actually dealt with a dead body. But it's not unique in the sense that we're all as good as dead bodies. We're all as good as dead. And you may say, I'm the son, I'm the daughter of such and such person. But in fact, when we get guru and we get the Vedic literatures, they are the real father and mother. And our duty is first of all to them. Just like you saw, my mother came here, you know, and she's so many, you know, she associates with the devotees. But I made it very clear. I said, unless you come here as a devotee, you can't come here. Because what is the basis of the relationship? I'm a sannyasi, so socially I am dead. I have no relationship anymore with anything within this world. But I can have relationship with devotees. If you can come here as a devotee, then I can have a relationship with you. But if you come here in the guise of being my mother, I've already taken sannyas. So how can I have a mother? The Vedic literatures are my mother. So you have to either, it's your decision if you want the relationship with me. She's saying, you know, sometimes I want to see you. I said, that's your decision how you'll see me. But I'm obliged by the position I've accepted as a sannyasi. Now, of course, a grihastha may not be so strict. A grihastha may not be, but a sannyasi has to be strict. So, gradually we have to come to the point of seeing everything in relationship to Krishna. Of course, I also think that by dealing with her in this way, I will force her to become a devotee. I will utilize this attachment that she has for my material body and make her a devotee, perhaps, if Krishna wills. But otherwise, that's her choice. Otherwise, we fall into this trap. That, you know, this is my body, is who I am, this is my parents, this is the world, this is how I become happy. So much confusion comes as a result of that. We have to act with transcendental knowledge. We have to do our duty. And then we come out of material entanglement. We put an end to the suffering. So all of this knowledge is only possible by the grace of Guru. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, we should serve them. As Narottam Thakur says, Echai Goshari Jara Muhitara Dash Tasabara Padarenu Mora Panchagras. I want to be the servant of the servant of the six Goswamis. And he says, Padarenu Mora Panchagras. I want the dust from their lotus feet as what? As my food. Now some of you serve us prasadam. Why don't you give us this prasad? You're always busy cutting up apples, cutting up other fruits. Don't you know what we want to eat? We want to get the dust of the six Goswamis. Better than that, we want the dust of the servants of the six Goswamis. So you please go to Whole Foods, you see, and get us some of this some of this Goswami dust. No, they won't sell it there. It's very difficult to get that dust. So we are searching after this dust. Why? Because one granule of mercy, one granule of the dust of such mercy can transform our consciousness. Not that we simply live by eating and sleeping. Our life is not kept together simply by eating and sleeping, and eating ordinary food and sleeping hour after hour. The six Goswamis, what did they show? They kept alive, not by eating. Raghunath Das Goswami reduced his eating to how much? As much buttermilk as you can put in a thimble. He drank that much buttermilk every 2 days. Now you go ahead and try that. You're all interested in going on fasts and diets. Everybody, I'm on a juice diet, I'm on this diet, I'm on that diet. But you're taking plenty to eat. You try and take one thimbleful of chach. Chach is a special butter. It's not really the buttermilk. The buttermilk that you get here in the store is different than chach. This is a very special thing which is made by only by the villagers in certain parts of India. And he was drinking this chach. Only enough, a tip of a pinky. How much was he sleeping? 20 minutes, 30 minutes, sometimes a little more. And going on doing what? Writing beautiful Sanskrit books, writing beautiful Sanskrit poems, going around Govardhan Parikrama. We don't live by material means, just like our devotee Kirtita. Everybody knows how sick Kirtita was, right? When Kirtita left here, everybody was crying. Why were they crying? Sita. Yeah, everybody said this is the last time we're going to see her, and everybody was crying, right? Could she eat anything? Kunti, do you remember? Couldn't eat anything, right? Only taking that, what is that they give you in a hospital? That, what is that stuff? No, but what is that sugar thing? Glucose. Practically, she could only eat glucose. And she was staying alive, right? Now, I spoke to her on the phone 2 days ago. She said, I just finished my second Govardhan Parikrama. Now, Govardhan Parikrama is 24 kilometers. That means about 17 or 18 miles. She just said, I just finished my second one. She said, and every other day, I go on Braj Mandala Parikrama. That means they walk at least 10 kilometers. I said, how are you eating? She said, I'm accepting. My body's accepting. Arjuna's wife, Vrindavan Bihari, she's cooking for her. And she said, but I'm eating. She said, I don't know. I'm dancing. I'm eating. I'm chanting. I've never been healthier in my life. Now, how did it happen? She had all these doctors here. She herself was working in the hospital. She had the best of medical attention, and she was dying. And then she went to Braj. She went to Vrindavan, and she surrendered herself at the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna in Vrindavan, and all the Vaishnavas there, and took the association of all of the pure-hearted devotees of ISKCON who live in Vrindavan, and her health miraculously returned. This proves that actual medicine, actual remedy to all ills, is Krishna consciousness, nothing material. Why? Because you're not any longer the same person you were. Sometimes people are interested in astrology. You see, they said, let me see really what I am or what I should be. You know, let me look at the astrology report. What is the use of an astrology report when everything has now changed? It was okay while you were a karmi, but now that you have become a devotee, it doesn't hold true anymore. We now work by a different set of rules. To join Krishna consciousness, and then you may say, I'm not sure I'm going to stay. Or I'm not sure I'm even happy being here. It doesn't matter. You already went too far. You have already fallen in the trap. Do you think that I knew what was going to happen to me the first time I met Prabhupada? And he said, Krishna consciousness is very simple. You only have to chant Hare Krishna. I thought, oh, that's easy, no? Chant Hare Krishna. And the devotees said it's even easier than that. Even if you don't chant, just eat prasad. You know, and I ate a full plate of this halava, and I said, give me more. And they said, sure, no problem. And they kept giving more and more, and they didn't have to pay anything for it. So much prasad, and they were putting halava. And I said, can I get more of that? I said, you can get as much as you want every day. I didn't have any idea what the price of all of this was. I thought it was all free. Free and easy. I never imagined that it was such a heavy price tag on these simple things that we would now become, you know, crazy. Who could have ever imagined it? So this is the mercy of a Vaishnava. You see, he tricks you. Now you can say, well, that's not very good. to cheat someone, to trick someone, that's not very good. People are supposed to be honest, especially people who call themselves religious. You do not know what is Vrindavan. You see all these people in these pictures? There's not one honest person amongst them. They're all the biggest trickers, tricksters, and cheaters. They're all cheating. In Vrindavan, everything is very, very crooked. The Jamuna River moves in a crooked way. Look at Krishna's stick that he's holding his arm on. You see it? Is it a straight stick? Yes or no? Well, it should tell you something about Krishna. This is how Krishna is. This is how Radharani is. Everybody is very crooked. Why? Because in this, to get you out of the material world, so many tricks are required. So many tricks. You see? You are claiming to be a very honest person. You are saying, I am very moral. I am so dutiful. You see? But what are you being dutiful to? Maya, the illusory energy, who is the biggest cheater. So to bring us out of this Maya, Krishna and Krishna's devotees find so many different ways. So many different ways. Just like Sanatana Goswami, he used to inquire so many questions from the Vrindavan resident. Oh, how is your son? How is your daughter? How is this? Devotees do that. Prabhupada also did that. He would stop someone, how is this and how is that? And what would be his purpose? Ultimately to lead them into Krishna. Just like we say, oh, good morning, sir. You're coming out shopping pretty early this morning. Or you've come to this hospital pretty early today. Well, I'm sorry, we're going to have to give you a ticket. Right? We give Rigupati has taught us, he'll give you a ticket. And they said, what did I do? What did I do wrong? He said, well, you see, it says here that you smiled too big today. You have committed a great offense of smiling today, to the biggest smile in this building. Therefore, we're now giving you this ticket, which is a free or a reduced coupon to come to our restaurant. And just because you're such a good sport about it, we're going to also give you a gift of this book. These are all tricks. Are they bona fide tricks? No. Certainly they're bona fide tricks. What is the purpose of these bona fide tricks? To somehow induce someone to take to Krishna consciousness. Now if you say, well, I don't think it should be tricky. Yeah, that's all right. Then you do it without being tricky. But somehow make people Krishna conscious. Our purpose is that. Of course, we don't want people to feel bad at the end. If someone actually feels like this is deceptive or something, then Prabhupada said that is very bad. We're not talking of that type of deceptiveness. But very innocent, nice, sweet dealings between people where we make them smile and they feel happy and we don't ask them for some money at that point, but the ice is broken and we can then give them a transcendental literature. And they look at it and we say, give a donation if you can. That is a nice thing. So, of every one of us, therefore, has to understand that we should let Krishna and let Krishna's representative, the spiritual master and the devotees, trick us. We should pray for this. We should set ourselves up to be deceived from embracing Maya so that we can learn how to embrace Krishna. We'll stop here. Ask if anyone has any comments or questions. Mahaprabhu.
Appears to be a contradiction in that we're saying real human life takes place at second birth, and in order to be a father, one must be a guru. So if father is guru, why wouldn't that child be considered?
Because birth. The question is, if second birth means to be given spiritual knowledge, a father is already a guru because he gave birth to the child. No.
Not because he gave birth, but in order to be a real father, according to the virtue code, he must be qualified.
Yes.
To give spiritual knowledge.
Yes.
So now it appears to be...
No. If he's a real father, then that's the second birth. Real father means giving knowledge. Real guru means one who gives knowledge. First birth, we say everyone can get a first birth, which means birth from womb, or birth by some means, from an egg, from sweat, whatever. Second birth means transcendental knowledge. Am I understanding you rightly? Anyway, the second birth implies giving knowledge. If a father or mother doesn't give knowledge to their children, then actually the child is only firstborn, not secondborn. And second birth is the spiritual birth. And what is the purpose of human birth? If a human birth doesn't get a second birth, which is spiritual knowledge, then a human birth is no better than an animal birth, because animals are also firstborn. What is the difference between a human and an animal? The human gets second birth. Animals can't. Another question? Chaitanya Priya.
It's stated that the soul is sleeping, the conditioned soul. And then we say, but you cannot be inactive because the soul is always active. So, what is the soul, sleeping and active?
Dormant. Dormant. Its nature is to be active. Just like talking about the body, what is the nature of the human body? To be always active. But sometimes it also sleeps. So sleeping is simply it is the resting stage of activity. Within activity, there is sometimes resting or pausing. So similarly, the soul may be dormant temporarily, but the dormant condition is not the natural condition of the soul. The dormant consciousness and sleepingness of the soul is not its nature. It's not its true nature. Just like the true nature of a man is not to be sleeping. His real life is when he's awake and active. And in fact, we call the other thing dreams. Even when he's sleeping, he dreams about when he's active. That proves that it's very rare that you dream about dreaming or dream about sleeping. Sometimes it happens. So the actual nature of the soul, when we say the nature of the soul is to be ever active, doesn't mean it can't be temporarily in a state of slumber. But it's not its normal condition. Otherwise, when you take rest, why do you set an alarm clock? Or why do you say to someone, wake me up? You could say, now let me sleep forever. Which some people try to do. And what happens? It doesn't work. They take an overdose of sleeping pills. And what happens? Boom. They take their next birth and they're active again. They're awake. Who turned on the alarm? They wonder.
So when we say the soul is dormant, we mean it literally, that the soul is dormant in a condition state, is inactive.
Inactive. Yes. The Bhagavad Gita, when it says, Krishna tells Arjuna, you should learn what is action and inaction. What is action and inaction? This is a very important subject. So one, to see action and inaction, and inaction in action. Action in inaction means that a person who is spiritually aware, his material senses are not acting. So it appears that he's inactive, because his material senses have been purified, and he's not engaged in material activity. So he's inactive. But what does it say? That's real activity. Why? Because actually his soul is engaged. His soul is active. But what does inaction and action mean? A person who's very active, doing so many things, a happy fool, and he's actually inactive. What does it mean? His soul is inactive. Another meaning. When the soul is active, the karma is inactive. And when the soul is in a sleeping condition or not acting, and the body and the mind is acting, then there's so much, you can say so much karma coming. So a person whose senses and mind are completely in spiritual life, there's no activity of karma. There's no reaction coming. But a person who has no spiritual activity is occurring, accruing so much new karma. So the soul, we say the soul is in a sleeping condition. Jeev jago, gora chandra bole. Wake up, sleeping soul. Wake up, sleeping soul. You'll be detached.
But the body will continue.
The body will always do. Prabhupada says that. He says as long as you have a material body, there will be some desires and other things. Because that's the nature of this body. It's the nature of this body. Only when you get a spiritual body does that cease altogether. Therefore, it's mentioned by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur that only at the point of prema is every last tinge of desire burned away. Why? Because at the stage of prema, there's no more material body. So the body will be hankering. That's the nature of the senses. They're lusty. They're hankering. But one is detached from his body, detached from his senses, doesn't simply act on the dictation of the senses. Yes. But when the Mayavadis say Aham Brahmasmi, they don't understand properly what that means. Therefore, it is described that they think they're liberated. They think that they have come to that point. But it's only intellectual because they haven't come on the practical functioning of the soul. They don't know how the soul acts in spiritual life. And therefore, Vimukta Maninas, they only think that they're liberated. And what happens? They fall down into material life again. Because it is natural to be active, and they don't know how to get spiritual activity, they fall down. So they don't understand Aham Brahmasmi properly. Unless you understand God and your relationship with God, understanding that I am spirit will not help you. It's not full knowledge. So the really knowledgeable person is a person who is seen to be 24 hours engaged in Krishna's service. He is advanced. And therefore, Prabhupada pushed us to be very active in Krishna's service. Because that's the practical, that is the manifestation of the liberated platform. Now, even if you may argue, well, I haven't come to that realization yet. If I just try to be always active, and I don't have the realization, I may fall down. But Prabhupada's point is that his point is also that by imitating the right thing, you gradually learn how to do it. Of course, there has to be proper balance of all activities. But the point is, our philosophy is not that when I become pure, then I'll chant. Our philosophy is we do what a liberated person would do as far as possible, and gradually the full understanding of it fills in. Not that we take risks that a liberated person can take, but we act continuously in Krishna service. Let us give a few other... We can... Yes, Nityananda.
You say that in our material life, that our soul is inactive. Yet you see that the soul is implicated in the activities.
No, not really. Not actually implicated. The soul is not actually implicated. Just like the moon is in the sky, and the moon is reflected on water. And we see that whatever the reflection of the moon is implicated in whatever happens to the water. But the moon is up there shining. The soul is dormant and it's not actually implicated in karma. But because the consciousness, which is a symptom of the soul, is identified with the karma, therefore it appears that the soul is implicated. The consciousness is like a reflection. It's like the moon reflected.
Yeah, the reactions don't affect the soul.
Not the soul proper. They affect the consciousness. The soul is not affected. The consciousness, the reflection of the moon is affected by whatever happens to the water. But the moon is not affected. Now, when you come into spiritual life, then your soul actually becomes active. When you chant in kirtan, it's not just the consciousness and the body. Not when you come to the really pure position. When you come to the liberated position, the soul is fully active. Otherwise, you can say that all the activities we're doing are gradually waking up the soul. So we're in a half-wakened condition. It's not still fully affecting the soul. Because when the soul is fully affected, then you're liberated. Dr. Reggie.
Yes, you said that when one attains divine consciousness, we know that he's aloof from the senses. Therefore, it's like the body's not doing anything, but the senses are being utilized for their material purposes. I just wanted to make it...
No, wait a moment. You got this mixed up. In divine consciousness, the senses are not utilized for material purposes. They're utilized for serving Krishna in divine consciousness.
Yes. Well, I'm saying, like say for an example, if someone like became, it's not like true to happen, but if someone became self-realized from what he was to what he was now, isn't a point that he would feel control just because he would lose?
I'll give you an example that Prabhupada uses. Prabhupada gives the example of a liberated person as just like if someone becomes drunk, then they're so drunk they don't know if they're wearing clothes or not wearing clothes. They don't know exactly whether they're coming or they're going. They're simply moving in a different way. He said this is not a perfect example, Prabhupada said, but this is an example of a liberated person. He's unaware of the functioning of his body. It goes on in a mechanical way. But he's enjoying transcendental life within. But that's a very advanced stage. Don't try to imitate that now. And if someone says, you know, how come you didn't bathe today? You say, huh? How come you didn't wash your clothes, huh? I don't know. That is called spaced out, not liberated. All right, it's 9 o'clock. I'm afraid we're going to get all of our schedules disturbed. I think we have to contain ourselves and end here. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Vaishnav Sangha ki. Gaur Premanandi.